Attention. At this moment, you are now listening to
a Radio 1 show.
Well, a lot of things make me angry. You know, the general system in which we live today. I mean, the government take the piss. That's what makes me angry. Do you know what I mean?
Fist of Fun.
From Plymouth University in Exmouth.
Hello, I'm Stuart Lee.
And my name is Richard Herring. Hello, 1FM listeners, joining us here in Exmouth for Fist of Fun.
Fist.
1FM's new, slightly topical, pseudo-satirical, pure art comedy show.
Fist of Fun.
And at the top of the show there, the voice of Jamiroquai, the lanky, gibbon-armed, Dr. Seuss cat-in-the-hat-style, hat-wearing pretender to the pop soul crown. Harsh words about the government from the young 13-year-old there. But... he's right, the government do just take the piss, don't they? I myself have been plagued by early morning phone calls from Conservative MP William Waldegrave mocking me because my mum bought a Betamax video system in 1981. But anyway, Rich, it's been an amazing couple of weeks, hasn't it? You know, the Conservatives trying to destroy the permissive society and the attempted coup in Russia there when they're just on the verge of democracy and Chinese breaking the international ban on nuclear weapons and throwing the entire future of the planet into jeopardy again, you know.
But we had our picture, didn't we, in the Sunday Times, didn't we, this week, Stu, in the culture section.
Oh, yeah.
My mum actually held up in front of her class as a teacher at Blackford Middle School in Somerset, and they're all very impressed.
Yeah, they were, yeah. But Rich, remember, that's because those children were from Somerset and they wouldn't have seen a photo before, would they? The old Somerset-Devon rivalry there. Don't forget, children from Somerset would be impressed if Rich's mum had just held up any coloured object in front of them. Perhaps moving it from side to side a bit. I don't really like having my picture in the paper, so I don't like being recognised. But on Saturday, I was walking around minding my own business in Soho, in London, and then all these blokes recognised me and started having a go, you know.
That seems really odd, that, doesn't it, Stuart? Let's have a look at what happened, shall we?
Fist of Fun.
How much is this video, please?
Well, lesbian licky lick.
Yes, I believe that's its name.
The lesbian licky lick. £25.
Right, thanks.
Hang on. I know you, don't I?
No,
I know you from somewhere.
No, you don't.
You're that stand-up comedian, aren't you? I saw you once on Sky TV and at the Ha Ha Hee Hee Club in Stratton. It's Stuart Lee. That's it. Look, everyone, it's comedian Stuart Lee.
Stuart Lee.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, look, about this video, right, I know it sounds like a lie, but I'm getting it for friends, as a, like, a joke, sort of joke.
No, really, I am.
Yeah, and I'm writing a piece on pornography for The Guardian.
Yeah, I'm researching a feminist documentary on Channel 4.
Yeah.
No, really, I am. I am anti-pornography, right, as a rule. This is just, I'm getting this as an ironic joke for one of my friends from university. Or something.
No, Stuart Lee, here is the truth. You are a middle-class liberal who believes pornography degrades and insults the sex act.
But yeah. You still harbour a secret desire to see what girl-on-girl action is really like.
So you bought a porn video.
As an ironic joke.
To amuse your friend.
But you're still going to enjoy sitting in a dark room and watching it with him, aren't you, Stuart?
Stuart Lee!
No. And you all think that you're very clever, don't you? But what I'm going to do now, right, is go home and write a funny thing about this incident for the radio with you lot in it and make you all look like hypocritical idiots. Ha ha.
This is it, is it? This is what you wrote?
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Well, it's quite good. Yeah, I quite like what you've tried to do sort of with the Greek chorus effect you've got there.
Thanks, Phil.
Yeah, but I think at the end of the day, it's you, Stu, not us, that comes out looking like the hypocritical idiot.
I said you should rewrite it, didn't I? But you said it had to be like this and it was clever satirical art and I didn't understand.
Stu, soon as this bit's over, can I have the video then?
Well, I was going to keep it actually, Pete.
Why?
Well, I had to buy it, right, and I need to get the price label off for the tax expenses and that.
Yeah, well, why doesn't he just give you the label and then he can keep the video?
Well, that won't work, right, because I have to watch this to check who's in it for the Performing Rights Society.
No, there's a clip from it, though.
Yeah, but I don't understand why we have to get the video anyway. It's only radio. I mean, nobody can see it.
Just give it this. I'm handing it back, right, to me, all right? Just hand it over, yeah?
You want to fight or what?
Look, you buy your own pornography, mate. I had to.
You said you buy it.
Look, I thought you were buying it for me for my birthday as a kind of joke anyway.
Look, it's my video, right, and I'm keeping it, and that's the end of it, all right? Now, it's time for the first of our natural breaks, OK? If you can imagine Dr. Hilary Jones, but trapped in the body of a small fat bloke who looks like a gonk, and without any of the medical knowledge, then you'll have a clear mental picture of our weekly lifestyle tips contributor. He's from Wales, he lives on his own in Balham in South London. Would you please welcome Peter Bainham?
Thanks, Stu. You're always joking around, aren't you? Hello, I'm Peter, and I'm back with some more recipes and lifestyle ideas, which I thought up with my brother Charlie in his flat. I'll also be solving some very common problems, such as Kellogg's Pop-Tarts, cooked or cold. I actually prefer cooked. I find it's worth the effort. Incidentally, these ideas for absolutely anybody, but especially the single man virgin of 30. And Charlie, who's 37. The first recipe is a very popular one, and it's ideal for if you're in a hurry, I don't know, to go and sit on your own in the dark or something. What you'll need is a big bag of Twiglets and a pint of milk, both of which you can get from any good news agent. Now, first of all, pour some of the milk in a paper cup like this. Then take a Twiglet out of the Twiglet bag, bite one end off each end, like that, and use the Twiglet like a straw to suck milk out of the milk, like that. And then finally, you eat the Twiglet, which is all sort of milk flavoured. And that recipe is called Milk Sucked Through Twiglets. Which you then eat. You'll notice I mentioned the newsagent in that recipe. However, like most people, I don't always have time during the day to get to the newsagent because I'm in bed making shapes in the wallpaper by looking at it. Of course, newsagents aren't the only place you can get food from. No, the other one's the petrol station. It's time for my second recipe, which I'll do for you to try later, Richard and Stuart. If you want. It's called Budget Swiss Roll. Take a slice of bread from the packet and put some jam on it. With you can use your hand. And smear it on the bread. Lovely. Then roll the bread up like a small carpet made out of bread. And place it under a cold tap for a few seconds. Wet the bread with the water like that. And roll it in the sugar to get a nice sugar surface on the bread. And place that in a heated airing cupboard for about 20 minutes. Then garnish it with a silk cut on the side of the plate. That's all from me for the moment. But before I go, what to do if you're absolutely terrified of worms? What I do is try to visualise something which doesn't look anything like a worm, like a cottage. Of course, it's best not to think about a long, thin, brown cottage with lots of segments and no eyes. Thank you.
Thanks, Peter.
Thought for the week. Naomi Campbell can literally have the pick of her men. She's dated Mike Tyson, the world's best boxer, Robert De Niro, the world's greatest actor, and yet she chose to marry Adam Clayton, that bloke with the glasses in U2. What a twat!
Well, it could have been worse. Naomi Campbell could have married Jamiroquai, right? And here... Here from TV's Raw Soup is another example of just one of the many clever things that Jamiroquai has said about the government.
Poll tax. Instead of being sensible, you see, when they came out with the poll tax, they could have asked everyone, all the poor people pay 100 quid, all the rich people pay a grand. But they didn't want to do it like that. So they said, all poor people pay 450 quid. So people think, well, bollocks, I ain't going to pay that. Instead, if they'd have said that, people would have gone, sell it 100 quid, I might as well pay it. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. What it means is that all the poor people should pay £100 and all the rich people pay £1,000. It's that simple. If only the government had thought of that. Well, if they did, right, would it have worked? Well, to find out, we've invited along economics expert and Dean of the Business School of Plymouth University, Don King. Hello, Don. Thanks very much for coming on.
Oh, I was told it was an intellectual program.
Are you the same Don King who manages the racist boxer Mike Tyson? Is that you?
Well, not really. I'm the Dean of the Plymouth Business School at the University of Plymouth. The thing he does his hair differently.
Yeah, he does. No, Rich, listen, this is Don King. This is the serious academic, Dean Don King.
Oh, Dean Don King. Dean. What did you say? Well, were you a Don before you became a Dean? No. Then you'd have been Don Don King, wouldn't you? Now you're Dean Don King, ex-Don.
Yeah. You're Don, right? Now, this £100 for the poor, £1,000 for the rich Jamiroquai tax system, right? Would, in your opinion, business professor, would that work, right?
Well, the reason that the community charge, or the poll tax, as it was usually called, was so universally hated was that it didn't follow one of the basic tenets of sound taxation, which was which was that people should be taxed according to their ability to pay. So the extent that the Jamiroquai wants to see tax higher on the rich than on the poor is, yeah, is basically on the right line. But what he falls into is a classic trap of a crudely structured tax system.
Yeah.
For example, there's no sudden threshold at which someone goes from being poor to being rich.
Yeah.
Say, Mrs. Smith, who works in a supermarket and earns $8,000 a year.
Yeah.
And the government says, if you earn $8,500 a year, you are rich. Okay? Now, Mrs. Smith works overtime all year and earns £8,510. You with me? She must now pay a £1,000 tax and is therefore nearly £500 worse off after working extra hard all year.
So the Jamiroquai tax, it wouldn't be popular, would it, is what you're saying?
I think it would meet some considerable resistance.
Yeah. Finally, before you go, can I just ask you what you, Don, think of Jamiroquai's music?
Well, I do like some of the tracks on the Emergency on Planet Earth album. And I did enjoy his live show at the Brixton Academy this summer. But at the end of the day, Jamiroquai is really just a poor man's curiosity killed the cat.
Yeah.
I much prefer the orb.
The orb, right. Yeah. Thanks, Don. Thanks for coming on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyway, thanks to Jamiroquai's manager for allowing us to play that tape. And I'm sorry, but we lied to you about how we were going to use it.
Thought for the week. England's World Cup hopes were dashed in a series of terrible refereeing decisions, which seems odd until you realise where the referee came from. Our old friend, Nazi Germany.
Hey, but you know, English football is rotten from the top to the bottom. Now, little Barnet Football Club are just like on the verge of going out of existence. So we sent Joe Unwin to find out a bit more about it earlier this week.
The players of Barnet Football Club leave the pitch after yet another defeat. If ever there was a club in crisis, this is it. Floundering at the bottom of Division 2, they've lost the first 10 games of the season and dwindling crowds have brought their financial problems into even sharper focus.
Here in the dressing room, the team are awaiting player manager Gary Phillips, who's about to make an important announcement about the club's future.
All right, now listen up, lads. Listen up, come on. Right now, as you know, the club's in terrible financial trouble. We have reached the final curtain, I'm afraid. I've had no option but to sell you all to the highest bidder.
Sorry, lads. Now, listen, there's no point arguing. It's already done.
Now, listen. Carl Hoddle, the old Hoddle. Now, I've sold you for £1 million.
Yeah.
To Chessington World of Adventures.
the theme park?
Yeah, the theme park.
Well, they're starting up the football team, are they?
No, no. Now, what's going to happen is, right, is that you will be enchained in your own enclosure, where to the delight of paying spectators, you will be expected to jump through hoops, catch fish in your mouth, and, of course, give displays of the footballing skills that have made you famous.
Right, right,
Now then, Dave Barnett.
Dave-o, the ball.
Yes, boss.
Foreign move.
Oh, Italian league, is it? Juventus?
No. I've sold you to General Alcazar, the corrupt dictator of the small South American republic, San Rico.
San Rico?
Now, what you'll be expected to do is act as a bodyguard during important state occasions, dispose quietly and efficiently of any liberal political opponents, provide a variety of sexual services to attending foreign dignitaries, and, of course, give displays of the footballing skills that have made you famous.
Hey!
What about me, boss?
Paul Wilson. I've sold you for £32.50 to a Mr. Philip Griffiths of Solly Hole in the West Midlands.
What does he want me to do, boss?
Well, he's an elderly man, Mr. Griffiths. He wants you to help him round the garden, you know, get his shopping in, carry him upstairs at night, you know, bathe him if and when the need should arise. But anyway,
and give displays of the footballing skills that have made me famous, yeah?
What?
Give displays of the footballing skills that have made me famous.
No, he specifically asked you not to do that, actually.
Mr. Phillips, the Sunday papers have raised doubts about where the revenue raised by the sale is going to go.
Now, let me put the record straight, Joe. Now, there has been no impropriety. Look, it happened like this, right? I was on my way back from a player selling shop with all the money I'd collected in a big bag when I came across a bent, wizened old crone on the edge of the wood, and she offered to exchange my bag for this.
A bean, boss?
No. This is a magic bean. Now, I intend to plant this bean on the centre spot of our hallowed pitch, where it will grow into a ginormous beanstalk, which I will ascend to find a magical kingdom of strange, coloured things. And here I will defeat the giant and return with my treasures, the League Cup, the FA Cup, the Charity Shield.
You're mad, boss.
You're not.
That is how Derby County started.
No, it isn't, Mr. Phillips. Derby County was founded in April 1884 by William Morley, a clerk at Midland Railway, and was formed from players from the existing amateur sides, actually. Derby Midland, St. Luke's and Darley Abbey. That's how Derby County actually started.
Yeah, boss, I think what you've done there, right, is you've confused the history of Derby County Football Club with the fairy tale of Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yes, I have, haven't I?
well, easy come, easy go.
The sad case of Barnet Football Club there, whose total lack of any money or players must put them out of the running for the Division 2 title this year, at least, I'd have thought.
Well, you never know, Stu. Something might come of that bean, said the bloke. Yeah, I'd give it a chance, Stu, you know. They laughed at the idea of toast, didn't they? Now it's time for our second natural break.
Hello again. In this section, I want to talk about grooming. Being well turned out is crucial these days, particularly on important occasions like if you leave the flat. If, like me, you often wear a shirt that you slept in last night, wear a jacket or a jumper over it to avoid people saying things like, "That shirt looks like you slept in it last night." However, try not to sleep in the jacket and the jumper as well, as that'll just spoil things. If your teeth are rotting and getting a bit yellow, put some Tipex on them. Try to check if you smell. Reach into your shirt like this and put your finger in your armpit. Rub it around for a second, then take it out again and sniff it. Of course, the only trouble here is if some other part of your body smells, or if you suffer from naturally sweaty fingertips. Bad breath's a terrible problem, isn't it? But toothpaste costs a fortune and I need the money for cigarettes. Hair care. If your hair gets really, really greasy, Why not place a piece of kitchen roll on top of your head and just hold it there for a few minutes? Finally, shaving. It's both painful and unhygienic to use the same Bic razor more than about 12 times. But what else can you do? Bye.
Stu, right? I like to write my lines for Fist of Fun months in advance, but Stuart, what you do is you write them on the afternoon of the performance, don't you? Which, you know, is lazy and annoying, isn't it, Stu?
Well, I'm sorry, Rich, I didn't get round to writing my line here, so I cannot reply to your accusation.
Very easy to be sarcastic, isn't it, Stu?
No.
You would do well to remember the fable of the ant and the grasshopper, Stu. The diligent ant worked all summer to store food for winter.
Right.
And the foolish grasshopper, who played all the day long, come the winter, was unprepared and had to bow down before the ant in shame.
Yeah, I do remember that story, Rich, but I can't see any parallel between that and, you know, your life and my life.
Can't you? I thought I'd made it clear.
No.
You were like the foolish grasshopper, you see.
But as I have explained, right, to you last week, I hold no truck whatsoever with animal fables. For they are about animals and not people, and therefore are false, deceitful lies. Let my campaign of truth continue.
Stuart Lee's True Fables.
This week, the ant and the man. Once upon a time, there lived an ant. And a man.
Hello.
It was summertime, and the sun shone in the field where the ant and the man lived.
Hey, Ray! It's summer! Come on, ant, let's arse around in just our pants. Playing frisbee and squirting each other with water for this hose pipe. Yeah!
But the ant did not join in with the man's foolish games, because he was responsible and hard-working and was gathering food in preparation for the winter, and also because he was an ant, and thus could not appreciate the pleasure of tossing a plastic disc through the air to a man. The man taunted the hard-working ant.
Go, ant, you are a twit. Look at you. You spend your whole time carrying leaves from one place to another. But look at me. I'm going to ride down to the park on my 10-speed racer and drink cider and shout at girls. Hey, you coming or what?
Again, the ant took no heed of the man and went about his work, because he was an insect driven purely by instinct and unable to make choices or value judgments. He was an ant, right? Do you understand now the point I'm making, right? All too soon, the winter came. The ant was snug in his hole, with enough leaves to last the whole winter through. But the man was still unprepared for the shifting of the season.
What's this? Snow? Oh, no, it's too cold to wear just my pants now. I'm squirting myself with a hosepipe has become unpleasant. I've got no food with me. What will I do? I know! I'll go home!
Fortunately, the man, being a human being, had his own centrally heated, semi-detached house. And a wardrobe full of warm winter clothes. But, oh dear, due to his tomfoolery in the field all summer, the man hadn't had time to go to the supermarket, and by now, it was closed.
Shit. Oh, hold on, I've got an idea.
Hello, pizza delivery, can I help you?
And so the man ordered a pizza and stayed in watching telly next to a warm fire until the spring. And come the spring, the man emerged from his house and ran to the field to see his friend, the ant. And there he saw, emerging from his hole, nothing. The ant, being only an insect, had died in its hole of old age. An insect's lifespan is much shorter than ours, of course, and it would have made more fun for it, really, to enjoy its short life to the full during the sunny weather. But instead, the ant chose to work hard all the time and then die in a dark hole in the dirt surrounded by uneaten vegetation. And there's a message for us all there, isn't it? It's that a man is much better than an ant.
Marvellous fun.
Bits of fun.
Well, Stu, that's the end of the show, which means, as you know, it's time for us to snuggle up in our big comedy fist of fun bed. Let's welcome the rest of the cast into the bed with us. First of all, come on, snuggle up the actor, Kevin Eldon. Thanks, Kev.
Just like to say, I'm very flattered to have been asked on the show tonight.
Yeah, I think the word's lucky, isn't it, really?
And being the woman in this week's show was Jo Unwin.
Now, Jo, you're probably best known, aren't you, as the woman out of that hilarious Prudential advert, you know, we want to be together.
No, I think I'm probably best known for my portrayal of Lucy the paramedic in the popular hospital drama Casualty.
No, I don't think so. That advert.
We want to be together.
We want to be together. Go on, Jo. And look, here comes the sad figure of Peter Bainham.
Are we go for a drink now then?
No, well actually, yeah, the rest of the four of us, we're just going to go back to the hotel, go straight to sleep. Actually, we've got a taxi.
I'll come in.
No, well, there's only room for four in the taxi, unfortunately. So you just go back on your own. We're going straight to bed. So don't bother looking for us in our beds.
All right, everyone, quiet down. I'm going to sleep now.
All right,
come on. All right, is anyone still awake?
What's going on? I'm trying to sleep.
Hey,
you've got that porn film on.
Yeah, I know. I'm just checking that thing for the right of porn rights.
That's nice.
Lee and Herring's Fist of Fun.